Everybody, welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.com. Scary movie love for scary movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm super excited for this week's show because we're going a little deeper, a little more esoteric. We're talking about Nina Forever from 2015, which means I am joined by everyone's favorite sex ghost, Rob DiCristino. Hey, Rob.
About to get sexy in here, Patrick. It's sex ghosts, sex threesomes, ghost threesomes.
Yeah.
Ghost sex.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a
graveyard is a sex.
Yeah. Yeah. Sex. This movie's got it all.
It's got everything.
It's got everything you could want in a movie. Happy Scary Movie Month. Rob, how's your Scary Movie Month going?
It's going great. 7-word reviews, everybody. Get them up. We got to get them up.
Yeah, we do.
Get them going. Speaking of getting them up, like in this movie, you got to get them up. Get them up. Get them up. We got more.
It would help if I've watched probably like 50 movies this month. I could probably write some 7-word reviews.
I'm scrolling through and noticing a significant lack of Bromley presence.
I got so behind that then I feel like I can't dig myself out.
Yeah. Yeah, you'll come up with it. You'll sit there and fire off a bunch. You'll be fine.
We shall see. You want to read some of these?
Let's do it.
Okay. For those of you unfamiliar with the Scary Movie Challenge, every year at F This Movie, it's something that we do. Every time you watch a scary movie during the month of October, go to fthismovie.com, find that day's post, and leave a 7-word review. We like to read some of our favorites on the show, which me and Rob are going to do right now. Go ahead, Rob.
Ronan C. says of Malignant, I get it. Where is my mind?
Lauren B. says of Pet Sematary 2019, sometimes not remaking the movie is better.
Mm. Ryan Sager says of Halloween 2018, phone and cheese, modern problems, modern solutions.
Jeremy Wickett of Hellraiser 2022, will tear your TV contrast settings apart.
You texted me. It was so funny because the first thing you texted me about that movie was like, it's so dark. And I did not notice it. I don't know why. I was watching a screener on Hulu and it seemed fine, but I haven't gone back and rewatched it. I'm sure everybody's right. I just, for whatever reason, did not notice it.
I couldn't see shit.
All right. Our own Michael Pomero says of The Fog, add mustache and Atkins could defeat Fog.
Very nice. Reed Strickland of Child's Play 3. Producer A, military school. Producer B, carnival.
Lindsay Wilkins has one of my favorites. Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2003. My boyfriend's face really highlights your cheekbones.
Andy Bishop of Poltergeist. Haunting results in baffling homeowner's insurance claim.
I had that one too. Brett Collum has a great one from Jaws. They stole Chasing Amy's famous scar scene. Sorry, Brett. I butchered that. But
no, you did good. You did good.
Thank you.
Adam O. of Burial Ground. Horny Italians, paper-thin plot, surprisingly crafty zombies.
Tris Videotape says of Zombieland, Double Tap. Plot hole. You'd never leave Rosario Dawson.
I think I read that one last week.
Oh, shit. Sorry.
No, that's okay. But it's just true.
Yeah, so it's true.
When something's that accurate, you have to read it twice.
Bears repeat.
Brian Sager of I Madman, and this is why I don't read.
Our own Rosalie Lewis says of Tetsuo the Iron Man, this movie is so metal it hurts.
I have a Rosalie Lewis somewhere. Where is it? Zombie. Come for undead, stay for the unclothed.
Let's see. Our own Adam Risky says of The Frozen Ghost, it's fine. It's 61 minutes. I don't know. And that works best because I can hear it in Adam's voice.
Rocco T. Thompson of Bubba Hotep, surprisingly down to earth for Baz Luhrmann.
I had that one too. Dan Snyder says of Extra, hoping for a prequel remake called Intro.
Chase Spence of Glorious, BC Gov deems this film COVID safe.
Jeff Quinn says of the Fright Night remake, you know what? This is pretty good, which I also thought watching that for the first time, the Scary Movie Month. Pretty good.
I haven't seen it since the theater. I didn't love it at the time, but yeah, maybe I'll check it out again. probably not. Lindsay Wilkins, Halloween 2018 bullshit on podcasters having that much cash.
It's true. Jonathan Mills says of Willy's Wonderland, great reminder, there's always time for pinball.
Mac McIntyre of Halloween Ends, glad nobody's fighting about this on Twitter.
Alex says of Resurrection, Rebecca Hall's addicted to making me sad.
Yeah, right? Chris Cabellos of Embrace of the Vampire from 1995, almost as bad as Milano is hot.
Yeah. Brian Kazmersky, I'm really sorry, Brian. Suspiria 1977 in 4K. I really hope my neighbors like Goblin.
This is a two-parter from William Smith. Okay. I have to read them together. Bram Stoker's Dracula. Even for a vampire movie, very horny. Mm-hmm. The next entry is Species. Wait, maybe I'm just very horny today.
Let's see. Our own Eric Ashbrushlager says of Event Horizon, Hellraiser, starring Sam Neill as Space Pinhead.
Very nice. This is my last one. JJ, Halloween Ends. Halloween Ends, my appreciation for kills begins.
I'm not quite there, but we'll talk about it. Dirk says of Don't Look Now, I didn't know I needed sexy Sutherland. But you do.
I mean, it's almost...
almost
redundant. What's the word I'm looking for? I guess redundant. I don't know.
Redundant works. I'll right. read one more.
Yeah.
Reed Strickland says of Audition. Audition. She's got it in the bag.
Oh, that was such a good one. I meant to write that one.
That was a good one. I like that one. These are great.
Yes. Keep it going. Gotta, as Rob says, get it up. Get the up. Numbers up.
Hashtag get it up.
So keep on doing your 7-word reviews. They're so entertaining and fun to read on the show. And we have a couple more podcasts for Scary Movie Month. So we have a few more opportunities to read your 7-word reviews. Rob, have you seen anything scary lately?
Scary. I have. I've been pretty good. I've been watching a ton of stuff and I've had a really good mix of rewatches and checking out a couple of new things. First thing new to me this month was Jeff Baena's Life After Beth, which I was riding the high of the Aubrey Plaza stuff recently, and right. that was kind of the one I hadn't seen. I didn't love it, but that was okay.
I haven't seen it.
It's fine. It's got kind of the one conceit, kind of actually sort of similar to what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah.
But Aubrey's totally going for it, as always. It's perfectly acceptable little horror comedy.
All right. Is that streaming anywhere that you know of?
I watched it on something that was free. I know I didn't pay for
okay.
it. It's streaming right. somewhere.
Then I'll check it out.
Let's see. What else new to me? Oh, for Adam, I watched Death by Temptation.
Oh, yeah. Very nice.
James Bond III yeah. film. Definitely, you know, part of the Spike Lee company. You can see a lot of his collaborators in there. I said to Adam when I was watching it, I was like, this is like, I love a low budget movie like this that like looks like it's trying to make the movie before anybody notices they're making a movie. Like, let's just get in and make this movie real quick and it'll be really fun and then we'll get out of here. Like, it's pretty, you know, it's put together in a way that's very, it's a very homemade movie. The acting sure. is very homemade. It's very much like, you know, wouldn't it be fun to make a movie? But I enjoyed the hell out of it. I thought it was really, really fun.
Yeah, it's super good. I just saw it for the first time last year or maybe the year yeah. before. I think also on Adam's recommendation, and really dug it. It's really good.
I really like it a lot. It's really yeah. it's one of those movies where, you know, we talk about like cynicism all the time, and it's just like, man, they really wanted to make a movie. Like,
yeah,
that's awesome. Like that's so much fun. I also watched we talked about this on Reserve Seating a while back, and it was on Shudder, which I resubscribe to every October, and that's I Am a Ghost.
Oh, yeah.
The H.P. Mendoza movie, because I was high on Pulse.
Right.
And Adam was like, you know, that movie is actually kind of similar in its you know, kind of composition and sort of the quiet horror of it and stuff like that. And I totally agree. I thought that was really, really cool. Storytelling wise, you know, I was obviously had some questions, but it was really, really interesting. The images, some of the stuff at the end, I won't spoil the movie because there's not really, I mean, it's a ghost. She's trapped in a house. She realizes she's a ghost and she's trying to escape, but it's mostly that sort of negative space framing. And there's that really scary moment at the end with I don't even really get into it because I don't want to spoil it, but it's definitely not an easy watch, but it's definitely like a cool, this would be like, I'm thinking of your harm, like your marathons. This would be like, maybe not in the Giallo spot, but like maybe right before or right after the Giallo spot. You know what I mean? It's in that range. I really liked it a lot. It's fun.
Yeah, that was a Chaby recommendation years ago. He's always like good on the super low budget horror. And the first time I watched it, I like fell asleep and woke up for the very end. And it was like waking up to a nightmare. It was awful.
It was really cool. I like the way that movie, I like it, the way it ratchets up. I thought that was really fun. And then knocking stuff off the list that I said I was going to watch, I checked out Claire Denis' Trouble Every Day.
Okay.
The French, zombie cannibals. Very esoteric. I thought it was, maybe you need to watch it again. I don't know. I was in and out of it. I'll put it that way.
I don't remember it super well, to be honest, which is weird for a movie that I probably should remember.
Yeah. Again, everyone says it's a horrifying terror masterpiece, and sure, I'll watch it again. I wasn't super, you know, into it.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Cinéastes everywhere. I know I'm like breaking all the rules right now, but
yeah, you're not allowed to dislike a Claire Denis movie.
That's the way it be sometimes. And then everything else, just tons of rewatches, you know, things like Excision. I rewatched the other day. That was
nice.
Fun. Day of the Dead, Hellfest, Daybreakers, did a couple Halloweens, The Love Witch I rewatched yesterday, that movie rules.
I saw your 7-word review for that, so I knew that you had rewatched it.
Yeah. And My Best Friend's Exorcism.
Oh, how was that? I haven't watched it yet.
I get what it's doing. It's trying. It's got the sort of YA horror. There's like a weird like Twin Peaks through line to it, not in delivery, but in like the plot in terms of the character archetypes. I kept watching it going like, this is kind of like a Laura Palmer and this is kind of like a this character.
Okay.
But perfectly serviceable like teen comedy, you know, teen horror comedy. You would see it on like Freeform or something like that. I thought it was fine.
All right.
Really, all I got. Been watching a ton of shit, and it's all been pretty fun. How about you?
That's good. I think I just talked about this on the Patreon show that we just put out. But I have had to watch so much. I've had to watch like 10 Hellraisers and 8 Hammer movies and a bunch.
You say had to watch 10 Hellraisers. I mean, come on.
I'm sorry. I got to watch 10 Hellraisers. I'm not even all the way done yet. But so much of what I'm watching is podcast stuff. But I have found some time for some rewatches. I want to talk about a couple things that were new to me. And that would be, we'll start with the new Lucky McKee movie, Old Man, which Erica and I just watched last night. And, I liked it. I wanted to love it because his first few movies I really, really loved. And then he's made a couple that I was a little more lukewarm on. I haven't disliked anything he's made, but like, I didn't love Blood Money and I didn't love, oh, shoot. What was the Lifetime movie that he made?
The Lifetime movie?
It's not actually a Lifetime movie, but it's basically a Lifetime movie. Like, it was produced by the company that makes all the Lifetime movies, and I want to say it premiered on Lifetime after it played festivals. It's called Kindred Spirits.
Kindred Spirits, okay.
Which I thought was okay. I liked this one probably better than both of those without totally loving it, but it's definitely a movie that I probably need to see a second time. For much of the movie, I just was like, oh, this is very much a pandemic movie. It's essentially two people standing in a cabin talking to each other. And then it goes somewhere else that I wasn't anticipating and forces you to sort of rethink the previous hour. I didn't have a chance to watch it a second time, but I feel like seeing it a second time, knowing what I know, I could appreciate the first hour a little bit better.
You're reminding me, I haven't seen Old Man yet, but you're reminding me that I need to rewatch May this month, which I feel like is always a good idea.
May rules and is on Shudder, I think.
Shudder, yeah. Yeah, I'll watch Old Man at some point. I think there was, I don't remember if it went around the screener cycle or not.
They did, for sure. Yeah.
They did. Okay. I'm not sure. Maybe I missed it. Yeah. I will definitely try to check it out though. Cause I like Lucky McKay. I haven't seen everything, but
yeah,
I'm always, you know, certainly always going to watch something he makes.
Right. I'm trying to find my letterbox cause I'm trying to remember what else I watched. Ooh, a movie that's new to Shudder. Dario Argento's Dark Glasses, which is about a sex worker who is in a bad accident and goes blind and then needs a young boy to sort of be her eyes. And at the same time, she's being stalked by a razor-wielding killer because it's an Argento movie. I thought it was kind of a step up from some of his most recent works. I feel like it was like, it looks and feels kind of cheap. And it has a lot of the same problems as a lot of Argento movies in terms of its portrayal of women and sex. And, you know, he hasn't grown a lot there, but it is like a little sweeter than a lot of Argento movies, because of the relationship between the woman and the kid. There's no great, like, set pieces, but it's definitely, I thought, an improvement over stuff like Dracula. It was better than Dracula, and it's better than the Mother.
The third.
Mother of Tears.
Mother of Tears, yeah.
Yeah, I could not think of the name of that movie to save my life, but Mother of Tears. I liked it better than both of those. Again, not great, but I appreciate that he's still making movies and making, you know, Argento movies. And it's on Shudder, so there's no risk.
Well, I've got a couple days left with Shudder, and I will check it out.
Yeah, you should. Again, it's short, and if you're an Argento fan at all, I definitely think it's worth watching.
Totally.
The only other thing that I feel like we probably should spend a couple minutes on is Halloween Ends, which just came out in theaters last week and premiered on Peacock. Did you have a chance to watch Halloween Ends?
I did.
Okay. What did you think of Halloween Ends? The good news is you have nothing to fear wading into this discourse.
I was going to say, the great thing about this is there's no risk. There's no, like, this is
no
just,
one has a strong opinion on this movie.
It's me and you talking here.
Yeah, that's right.
I like it more than Halloween Kills.
Okay.
I thought that it could have been lazier. And so there's some virtue in that.
Sure.
I thought it was incredibly disjointed. I thought its third act was trying to pay off things that it didn't really set up or had forgotten about from previous movies. I don't really understand this trilogy. I don't know. I think this reads to me like David Gordon Green had a pitch and he maybe had one movie and then they were like, yeah, but you get three. And he went, oh, okay.
It does feel a little bit like they were making it up while they went along.
The worst Halloween movie I've ever seen. There are worse Halloween movies.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I did not hate it. I definitely did not feel the way I felt watching Halloween Kills. Halloween Kills, I was like, oh, this is a disaster. Like, oh, this is, oh no. This one, I was like, huh, all right. I didn't expect this. I didn't necessarily feel that I got a ton from it, but it was certainly taking a swing. How about you?
Yeah, that seems to be the consensus. A lot of people are like, well, it took a big swing.
Right.
I saw somebody else, I think it was Kay Lynch, previous guest on F This Movie, she said that wasn't a swing, it was a bunt. And I was like, well, that might be true too. I don't understand baseball.
Somebody else mentioned, like, look, it's right in line with so many of the other later, you know, in terms of him having an apprentice and him this and that, like, oh, there's imagery. Look, here's what happened. The movie starts and it's the Halloween 3 font. And I'm like,
you're supposed to jizz in your pants when you see that.
Because that to me was just like, oh, here we go.
Right.
and I like Halloween 3, and I understand, but I mean that in a way where it's like, all right, it's going to be one of these. So I don't know. I don't. Anyway, you continue. Sorry.
No, I don't totally know what to say about it. Cause I feel like I'm in a similar camp as you. I don't think it's the worst. It went in a lot of directions that I wasn't anticipating. And I wonder if they were just making Halloween movies like every couple of years, and this was one of them, I'd be like, okay, you know, take it or leave it, whatever. The fact that it's like supposedly the end to this David Gordon Green trilogy puts an additional pressure on it.
But like, what is this trilogy? Like, what is this? Like,
well, I don't. Yeah, I'm not totally sure.
It's this thing, or like, so the all right, and we're not spoiling anything, but like, the end of the movie, the town comes together. I'll say that, and you're like, okay, wait, what does he think he's doing? Like, what is he? What does he think he's paying off here? What does he think this is? Like, what is this? And it's like, oh, so like from Halloween Kills. Like, I'm trying to piece it. I think what I need to do is I need to sit down and watch all three. And if I sit down and watch all three, I might have a little bit more of a coherent idea of what's going on here. But I just don't. Again, I have this feeling that they sat down and they were like, I got this like book of images. I've got this book of ideas. I've been waking up in the middle of the night with these images of Michael Myers in my head. And they said, great, you should make a movie. He's like, awesome, that sounds wonderful. I got a script, and like, great, you're gonna make three. And he was like, okay, I don't know what the other two are yet, and let's, you know, as I said, so and I can understand and I can appreciate him being put in that position, and I'm not trying to say the movie is totally without merit. Again, I'm being really cagey here because I have no idea what I don't have a dog in this fight. Like, again, like but I am still like, I'm a fan of the Halloween series. Like, I kind of have a dog in the fight. Like, I like these movies. I've watched the box set, you know, almost every Scary Movie month. I watch at least a couple of them. I love the first one. I think about this and I go, you know what? I don't want to say what is he driving at, because I've read a lot of things. Again, it's kind of like Nope, where I read something and I go, that was like really well reasoned and very interesting. I really appreciate that take. I didn't see that in this movie at all, but I appreciate that you did. You know, and I feel like it's going to be a lot of that, where we're kind of, I don't want to say we're grasping at straws, but where we're kind of being like, yeah, but this thing right here is something, and that thing over there is something, and that's totally fine. Listen, I defend Silent Hill. I mean, Pitch Perfect. I mean, like, I'm not throwing rocks at any glass houses here. Like, I'm not, you know, this is everybody's got their thing, and that's totally great. If you loved Halloween Ends, that's awesome. I don't know.
Yeah. What it did in a lot of ways was make me, and again, this was not a popular thing to say, but I said something to the effect of like, hey, we owe Rob Zombie an apology.
Which we do.
Because so much of, I think, what David Gordon Green has been doing with this trilogy is stuff that Rob Zombie was already doing in his two movies.
I just rewatched Halloween 2 yesterday. That movie's super good.
Yeah, it is. And half of his Halloween is good. I mean, the other half is fine, but it's just a remake of Halloween. And that, again, that doesn't make this trilogy bad. It just, if you're going to give it a bunch of credit for what it's doing, I wish people would also say like, oh, Rob Zombie was trying to do some of this. Maybe he did it in a way that you don't like. Right. He did it with characters and dialogue that you couldn't stand. I totally understand that. I don't blame anybody for not liking the Rob Zombie aesthetic. But just recognize that, you know, he was doing a lot of the stuff that this new trilogy is doing, including a lot of what I think is going on in Halloween Ends, but maybe I'm wrong about what Halloween Ends is really about.
I mean, it's kind of, he does it, except it's with Laurie.
Right.
And so maybe that's less palatable for some people, I think, is probably what we're driving at here. You can bring in a new character for that.
You can't
touch Laurie Strode. Laurie Strode, who, I was watching this, and I was, one of my original Seven Words reviews was going to be like, well, I mean, at least Jamie Lee Curtis is having fun, because the whole first part of that movie where she's just wacky and like, oh, this is cool. But then
it was fun to see her that way.
And then she turns on a dime.
Right.
Which I understand what the movie is trying to do with that. I don't think the movie accomplishes that. But I understand it's like, oh, you can't run from this. You can't escape this. Like, and there's even moments like the bit with the rocking chair or whatever it was with the where she's I don't spoil too much, I guess, but I'll just say things out of context.
That's a crazy
sitting
scene
there, and there's that thump.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, like that's something. there's a thing there. That's cool. Like that's, and it's like, oh, you think like, I like that idea of her identifying again, without spoiling, like kind of like identifying the monster in the room, and like, oh, that comes up. But again, that thread is from six things ago.
Yeah.
And it like swoops in real quick and then leaves again. And then it's like, man, we're back to Evil Dies Tonight again. And then we're back over here. And then we're like, well, is Michael Myers mortal or not? And then let's answer right. that question. And it's like, what are we, you know, it's got Rise of Skywalker, where it's like, we need to end 9 movies. And it's like, no, you don't. just tell a story. So, well,
interestingly enough, in 2018, when David Gordon Green's Halloween came out, I remember liking a lot of that movie and liking a lot of what it was trying to do. And the big sore thumb to me was all the Dr. Sartain stuff.
Yes, that's the part of that movie that kind of blows.
But guess what? Like, that's the big indicator of, like, what this franchise has in mind.
Yeah.
Like, it's a lot of Dr. Sartain. Like, the next two movies are practically Dr. Sartain stuff. And so I thought that that was the outlier in Halloween Ends, but it turns out that was the thing he apparently latched onto and was like, yeah, what if I make more movies based on this?
Again, we have so many Halloween movies. There's a Halloween movie out there for everybody. There's stuff. You go and find the stuff that you like, and that's awesome. And if there is stuff that you really latched on, I think there are some striking, when I think about this trilogy as a whole, I think, oh, there are some striking images there. There are some interesting ideas there. The continuity of the series has already been long since Butcher. Like, it doesn't matter.
Right,
I
right.
don't care about right. like, oh, it's not, you know, I read a thing about how ridiculous it was that they retconned her being a Myers, and like that was such a through line for the original series. And the problem with this is that they got rid of that, and they shouldn't be embarrassed. I mean, that's fine too. Have your take. That's totally fine. Everybody's allowed to have their takes. But like, I look at this and I go, huh, like, oh, that was all right. I don't necessarily know that that was something that was worth doing, but
right
here it is.
I
feel like we're being really like mealy mouthed about this, but like, I don't know what there is to say, and I don't know what we gain by even saying anything at this
right,
point.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I find almost every Halloween movie, even the ones I don't like, I find to be very watchable. Yeah. And I think this one's watchable. Like, I'll watch it again. Even Halloween Kills, I find watchable. It's real stupid, but like, it's watchable.
It's real stupid.
Yeah.
That movie is, I mean, that movie feels like it's made by somebody else. Like, that's the one, that's the middle where I'm just like, what? I think I need to rewatch that too, because I think that'll give me a better perspective on this one. Because I'm with you. I think that I like bits of the 2018 one. Like, there's things in there I think that are pretty good, pretty watchable. Halloween Kills is like fascinatingly bad. This one is just like a weird. It is. I mean, when I saw the Halloween 3 thing, I'm like, okay, I see what he's getting at here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, I see what he's going to try to do. I don't know what to say. And I feel like I said that a bunch of times already. I'm really sorry, everybody. I know this is really boring to listen to, but we're trying to talk around this thing that you can't even like. It's so late in the discourse now by the time we're recording this that it's like we've already lapped back around 3 or 4 times.
That is true. And so, yet we're trying not to spoil anything by right. not, you know, getting into specifics.
Yeah, I don't want to get too far into it. Yeah.
Right. Anyway, let's talk about a movie that we like maybe better than Halloween Ends, and that is Nina Forever from 2015, 2016. What are we talking about?
I think wide release was 16.
I think you're right. It played
like a
South by at 2015.
South by, yeah.
Yeah. So we were trying to think of something to do for Scary Movie Month,
mm-hmm.
and we tossed around a couple ideas, and then you landed on what about Nina Forever? And honestly, my first thought was like, I don't know if enough people have seen that to do a podcast on it. But here's a couple of things. One, this is the perfect excuse to force yourself to watch it because it's streaming for free almost everywhere. You can go to Vudu or Tubi or the Roku channel, or I think Freevee. It's got ads, but so what? Go ahead and watch it. Most of the Dread Central library is like streaming for free.
I do though recommend the double feature disc. It's this and Imitation Girl.
Absolutely.
That's a worthy pickup.
That is absolutely a worthy pickup. This, I think, was picked up prior to back when Rob G was in charge of acquisitions for Dread Central Presents. I know he picked up Imitation Girl and had the idea to put it on the double feature Blu-ray with Nina Forever, but I think this predates his tenure. Anyway, so this is your excuse to watch it. And also maybe we'll turn some people onto it. So
And I put out a thing on Twitter the other day about this, like kind of tipping that like we were going to talk about this. And yeah. I expected to hear crickets. I got nobody. I don't know that many people have seen this movie. And this is a movie that you've written about in the past. It's well, I went back and looked on the site. You gave it a great review. You put it on a list in 2016. I wrote a little bit about it in 2018 when I watched it for the first time, I think on your recommendation, probably.
Okay.
And I don't ever hear anything about it. I don't hear anything about that. We're going to talk about Abigail Hardingham, I'm sure.
how can we not?
Because we've been talking about her all day. But this is a movie that I have really, really come to like a lot. Like I remember when I watched this a couple years ago and I said, this is a Rob movie. Like, this is one of those movies that feels like it was made for me. Like this is touching on an insecurity of mine. This is touching on an obsession of this is touching on things that are so near and dear to me in terms of my just process as a human being. And I'm going like, wow, like that's, I mean, this is like, it's like, I think about like Chasing Amy or like Good Will Hunt, like this kind of movie for me, it's like on that level where I'm like, this is that, like if I'm working through my shit, this is the kind of movie that helps you work through your shit. You know what I mean? If you're anybody like me, and we'll talk about that, but like, I adore this movie. I think this movie's, I think it's, I don't want to say, I'm not saying like, I'll use the phrase, I think this is a perfect movie in the sense of like, it's perfect in what it's trying to do. It's got an idea. It's got something on its mind. It executes it beautifully. And then it gets the hell out. Like, that's it. It doesn't try to go too far. I adore the cast of this movie. I think both Abigail Hardingham and I always forget her first name. I really, really apologize. Fiona O'Shaughnessy. As Nina are outstanding. I think that there is, well, I mean, we'll get into it, but yeah, I knew I was going to rewatch this movie because I always rewatch this movie on Scary Movie Month. And I was like, I think there's a conversation. I think there's a show here. And part of it was because like, nobody talks about this movie. I never hear anything about it. And you know, I'm not the guy who comes on this show to do underrated horror movies, but I'm like, come on, man. And before we get into it, it's not really a horror movie. I understand that it's a romantic comedy sort of with blood, but it counts, right? I mean, come on.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's about
uses horror aesthetic for
a zombie ghost who returns from the dead every time people fuck, and it's got a lot of like Hellraiser DNA in terms of like coming out of the bed with the blood soaking through.
And there's some really gnarly horror imagery in this movie, and the way it's threaded through is a metaphor for what they're talking about. Yeah, if you've ever seen Nina Forever, I think it's a wonderful, it's a love story. It's a breakup story. It's a weird emotional baggage story. And it's got some really cool horror stuff in it. I think it's awesome.
So we're good.
Yeah. Oh yeah. We're all set. thanks everybody for listening. Thanks for having me on as always. Yeah.
I was watching it. Oh, go ahead. I was watching it today and I was wondering, and maybe this is a bad place to start. It works as metaphor. It works as theme. It works in terms of working out shit, like you said. Does it fully function as a narrative?
I would argue it does if you consider Nina. If you consider Nina as like the Greek chorus, like she keeps coming in and telling the people, like she kind of does their emotional arcs for them.
Right.
Every now and again, she'll pop in and tell them like, hey, here's what's really going on with you guys. And then she like goes away and then she comes back later in the movie. I think it's a movie where the plot is kind of a foregone conclusion. Like the story is a foregone conclusion. As soon as these two hook up, you realize, oh, nope, this is not going to work. Like, no. And the whole movie, you're kind of watching it fall apart. So I don't know necessarily that it's got the strongest like narrative. It's not the biggest in terms of like, I don't know necessarily that the plot is like the most, you know, again, I don't know. I don't even want to go that far though, because I really do think, again, it does exactly what it wants to do.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot to be said for that.
I have a hard time watching a movie about a guy who blows it with Abigail Hardingham.
You texted me earlier today and you were just like, You said they should have just called the movie Abigail Harding. And like, I'm not being like gross about it, but like, I just think she's just, there's something about this, and it's specifically okay. Let's get started here. Let's settle in. So this movie is about a young man who loses his girlfriend in a car accident.
Yes. Right?
He is despondent. He is depressed, and at one point attempts suicide by crashing his motorcycle. As he recovers, he encounters a young woman whom he works with whom he works at a grocery store with, and she is immediately into his whole death vibe. That's the whole, like, it's just like bad boy, like despond, I'm gonna fix him. It's that whole thing.
Right.
And you watch this woefully unprepared young woman and this man who is dealing with his trauma in the worst possible way fumble their way through a relationship that is so doomed from the beginning that you can't look away. Like, you just, because I think a lot of folks have been there, and a lot of, and I'm watching it going, like, I'm just running down the list. Like, I'm typing up my notes going, yep, nope, that was a red flag. That was a red flag. That's a red flag right there. That's a red flag right there. I do want to start though by saying, start 20 minutes in. The directors, Ben and Chris Blaine.
Yeah.
Who I think this is their only feature still.
I believe you are correct.
They've done a ton of shorts, and it looks like they work primarily as editors.
Yeah.
Which makes sense, because I think this movie is really, really well edited. Like, it's an incredibly, like, there's rhythms to this film. It is so much of the story is kind of in the framing and the editing, and sort of there's some parallel action that happens. I love the way they arrange flashbacks. There's the whole bit where they go to the parents' house for dinner together, and
yeah,
they show you the end first, and then they kind of intercut. Right. Like, it could be a little film schooly, but it's not the way that they put it together. I think
it does it the first time that they hook up too.
Right.
The first time Holly hooks up with what's his name,
Rob.
Thank you. How could I forget?
And you don't realize, yeah, no. And you don't realize that that's the second. All right, folks, that's the second time I did that today. You're gonna see. You're gonna watch reserve seating tomorrow, and I did the exact same thing, helping JB remember the name of a character named Rob. That was really good. And I recorded that earlier today. So anyway, just had to stop and tell you that. What Easter egg for you?
It does that same thing where we see the end sort of the hookup, and then
right.
we spin back.
And you don't even realize, what's cool about right. that is you don't even realize that what they're actually showing you is Nina arriving.
Right.
Like, you don't realize it. You think it's just like, oh, they're skipping to the sexy bits and stuff like that. And that's hot. But then you just see the blood start to
right.
come in, and then the hands, like, I love that. I think that's so wonderful. I think that there's a lot this movie, again, has to kind of say about. I watch this movie and I go, it's neither of their faults. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
you talk about the reasons why people get into relationships, right? You talk about the reasons why people seem appealing to each other. You know, for example, Holly, the Abigail Ardingham character, is told by her soon to be ex-boyfriend that she's a little vanilla. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, you know, you're just a little vanilla for me. Like, I'm dark. And this guy's like a total bozo. But he's like, you know, and she rightfully tells him off and says, like, you don't know anything about me. So we get the sense that dating Rob is an exercise in masochism for her, which applies to my life, too. and it's kind of like you have this this young person who doesn't realize that wanting to feel special because she can help him is not the basis for a healthy relationship.
Sure.
You know what I mean? She's going into something sort of under the wrong pretense. She doesn't understand that yet. She's like 19 years old. She goes into this with the wrong ideas. Rob is hurting, obviously, and he's looking for a sympathetic ear. He's looking for somebody who can maybe help him forget or allow him to stay in that without having to get over it. You know what I mean? There's so much of the Nina Forever of it all, which is like she comes into the relationship with the two of them basically and is like, you know, I'm here, it's a part of all of us, And what I love about that so much is the whole time Nina is rolling her eyes at her, being like, "You idiot child. Like, you don't understand what's actually happening here."
Right.
So again, the relationship is bad, but it's neither of their faults. And it is just kind of this thing you kind of have to go through. You have to understand, like, nope, that's not the right way to deal with your depression. And hey, that's not the right way for you to feel important. And, you know, I think it's kind of relatable for a lot of people.
Oh, absolutely. I like that Nina is established as antagonist is too strong a word, but she's this thing that needs to be exercised from their relationship, literally and figuratively. And having seen it more than once now, as you were pointing out, like, now when I watch it and I listen to her, I'm like, oh no, she's right. Yeah, Nina knows what's up.
She knows. When she every step of the way. I watched this movie twice over the weekend. I once just to watch it, and then once I made some notes, and I took note of almost all of her dialogue because she doesn't have a ton.
Right.
But every time she has something to say, she's pointing out the emotional subtext of the scene and where we are in the movie. She's like, "Nope, this is like he's using you. No, you know, this is not right. Like you, it's not about." And when the wonderful conclusion that they come to. I don't know if we should even spoil the end of the movie. I feel like we can talk
about it. Well, yeah, we have. No, we can spoil it because I need to talk about that section of the movie. But yeah, if you haven't watched it yet, go watch it and then come back and listen to it.
Stop watching Nina Forever. It's like 85 minutes long. Like, just go watch it. That whole idea of like her knowing, Nina knowing, like, this is not about you, this is not about him. Like, you know what I mean? Like, this is not about me. Like, the whole idea, I love the scene where she gets, so at one point, Holly gets the same Nina Forever tattoo that Rob has. And so the idea being like, we're going to remember her together. If you can't beat them, join them. Like, it's the three-way scene where she's like, look, if you're going to be there every time we do this, then I'm going to involve you. And the way that Nina, again, is rolling her eyes, and she's kind of just like, you don't get this. And it's so sweet that you think that this, like, oh, you poor child. Like, she keeps looking at Rob like, really, how old is she? You know what I mean? Like, and that is such an interesting, because as you said, she's not necessarily an antagonist, but she is like she's kind of like the moral center of the movie. She's kind of the Greek chorus, you know. She's the one telling the audience, like, these two don't have any clue. Like, they have no idea what they're doing.
Well, the first time I watched it, the sort of romantic, the naive romantic in me sees her as the obstacle that needs to be overcome.
Right.
That she's what's coming between them. And
because, I mean, it's literally like, here's my emotional baggage.
Right. Exactly. Like, she's literally occupying the bed with us. Right. Exactly.
She's bleeding all over. Yep.
And now when I watch it, I'm like, oh no, their issues obviously run so much deeper, and she's a manifestation of that, sort of, or at least she's acknowledging what actually needs to be addressed.
Because you see her, you know, Holly the second time after the initial horror, you know, he says when they go to start doing it again, he goes, yeah, she'll be there. And she and Holly says, we can cope. And like, that again is that thing where I love the idea that she's a paramedic. She's in training. I mean, mm-hmm. literally saving lives, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's kind of an obvious, you know, parallel, but I like the movie's simplicity. I like the way it addresses these themes. You know, she's a paramedic. She's learning how to save lives, and it shows her she wants to save this guy. And so this idea of like, it makes her feel important to be helping him.
Right.
And I love that the one time that we see them have a conversation, it's when they go away for the weekend to sell the letterpress thing. There's a moment where I wrote this down. I'm looking, hold on. It's funny that as they're having the one normal conversation that we see them have, there's one moment in their relationship that we see where they're not talking about Nina.
Right.
They're just bullshitting about like the guy they're going to sell the thing to. And then they immediately start playing with the letterpress again and doing the thing where they're covering each other, which at first you're like, oh, that's sexy, right? But then it's like, no, they literally can't let go of Nina. Like they both need Nina to be there. And that's so indicative of their relationship. It's not about, they both got into it for the wrong reasons. And so she's not, as you said, like Nina's not really an antagonist. It's not about her. And I love the way that eventually the movie makes that literal, where she paints the house. And whereas in every other time in the movie, Nina appeared when they were having sex, including at Nina's grave, which rules. That's so awesome. I love that scene so much. She's like, let's go fuck on the grave. And they're like, great. And then she pops down. She's like, it's a bit rude, isn't it? Fiona O'Shaughnessy is so funny in this movie. She is.
She
so
really is. Her physicality is really funny because she can't move very much.
She spends the whole movie bloody and naked, and she's hysterical, like hysterical. And the way the camera will linger on her, and she's kind of like looking at Rob and like looking back and like kind of making a little face. It's just so great. But there's that bit where she appears in the bathtub. And then obviously at the end, she's with her too. And we realize like that she's shifted. She's transferred.
Right.
It's not about Rob. And that's what that she comes to it. The conclusion she comes to at the end of the movie, when again, I'm sure we'll spoil it, but when she opens the door of her dorm room and Rob sees the blood all over the place and realizes like, it was never about you. This was about me. This was about me getting into a relationship for the wrong reasons.
Right.
This was about me wanting this to feel dark and to feel important and to feel adult, and all the little ways that the movie foreshadows that, where, you know, they linger on her textbooks, and the way that Nina's mom, there's a scene where he brings her to dinner, which is just like such the move that you think would help, but is so obviously such a bad idea. He brings Holly to Nina's parents for dinner, and they're just like, the mom is just like ripping into her, just like, oh, you must be your first boyfriend, and what kind of books do you like, and, you know, and all that. And she's just completely embarrassed and completely just heartbroken and all that. But the movie, by the end of it, really shows you, like, she says to her at the very end, when she's Holly tries to have sex with the other guy, Nina appears, mm-hmm. and she says, "This is not what I want." And Nina says, "Join the club." like I'm with you now. It's too late. You know, I just love that.
Yeah, that's the. I went back and read my original review from like 2016 mm-hmm. to see like what did I think about this movie then, and I think I was a little bit hung up on that aspect of the movie, and I think I maybe still a little bit hung up on that aspect of the movie. Okay. I think it's a really interesting idea. Again, it goes back to this idea that I think sometimes the movie works better as metaphor than as a narrative.
Yeah.
Which is okay. I mean, that's not a fault of the movie. It's not the expression, it's not a bug, it's a feature.
Right.
So this idea of the sort of transference of Nina is a really interesting idea. I just narratively, it doesn't totally land for me, and I admittedly don't care.
I'll put it this way. Like, I really like the bit where the letterpress, they go, I love that they go for the change of pace or the change of scenery. They go off to the beach or whatever. And there's that scene with the letterpress where they're doing all the stuff. And then she's like, you know, scratch me or whatever, you know, and, oh, it's getting all sexy and stuff like that. And then Nina pulls the letterpress down and like breaks her arm. Right. And kind of shows her like, nope, this is what this feels like. This is like, you're playing around with forces you don't understand here. You really don't get this. And then she says at one point, I wrote it down again. I wrote down almost all of Nina's dialogue. you won, you fixed him. Shame you don't want him anymore. You've let me under your skin. Like that to me, when you talk about the narrative being kind of maybe not all there, that to me, like, I feel like kind of justifies it or kind of makes it a little bit more coherent, because she is tracing the narrative beats in her dialogue. Like, she is explaining, she's popping in every now and again to explain where the characters are. And I think their behavior is so relatable and so interesting, really, just if you've ever been in a relationship, you know, to kind of, especially a young one, to be like, I recognize that. And she's telling me the truth that I didn't know then. That she's telling me the truth I couldn't accept then. So yeah, so maybe I can see your point. I don't have as much of a problem with it as you do.
Yeah.
Because I think that thematically she's right there. Like, she's really hammering it home. There's the whole, I mean, even the bit with the parents, that whole thing with the mom where there's that sort of odd suggestion, and the mom even comes out and says at one point, like, she says something like, you can't bring 30 years of something, how do you take 30 years of hangups into a new relationship? Like, there, that scene at the table, I'm really sorry, folks. I'm all over the place. I love this movie, and it's one of those movies that like helps you process your own shit, and which I think movies should do. He goes to have dinner with the parents like one last time, and he's saying to them, like, I'm trying to say goodbye. Like, you know, listen, we need to stop doing this. I need to stop coming over your house. Like, this is not helping anybody, which is true. But they react predictably, which is by getting defensive, getting angry. And, you know, anybody who knows somebody or anybody who struggles with, you know, people who just who don't like to process their emotions, like people who really genuinely resist to process their emotions. They don't want to think about them. They don't want you to know that they're thinking about them, you know, and they'll push out and they just push out and they push out and they push out and they throw it right back on him. We've helped you. We've done. And it's like, right. That's not the point. So you see that they're just as broken too, you know, they're just as in it as much as, so everybody is in this like vicious cycle. And Nina is the one sitting there calling it all out. She's like, I don't even want to be here. She's like, it's not like I'm the vicious, vindictive ex trying to get in your way. It's not this story. I just want to leave. She's like, oblivion would be preferable to this. I want to get out of here. It's you guys who keep me here.
Right.
Which I think it's just a wonderful, again, using the horror kind of tropes as a metaphor. I think it's a really wonderful way to do it.
I've never I was watching the movie trying to think, and it's been so long for me since I was like in a new relationship. I was probably like in my teens, you know, like the last time I actually was in a new relationship.
Well, I've because you know, you found the greatest one, right? I mean, so
of course, I was like 20 and it was like, I'm done, man. Why would I keep looking? I've never obviously been in a situation like this. I've never like lost someone that I was romantically involved with. So I was watching the movie trying to figure out like, have I been any of these characters before? And I don't know that I really have.
Yeah. Okay. Lucky you.
I'm not saying that to brag or whatever. I wonder if I would love this movie even more if I could really identify with, you know, one of these people.
And again, like I really did. I was like driving around today thinking like, okay, you need to not make this podcast your therapy session. Like you really need to not make this. You know what I mean? Like, cause I know that's how I sound right now. And that's totally fine.
Not at all.
I totally accept that because I think that this is a movie where like, you guys know me by now. Like if you're anything like me, like I think that there's a lot of good in this movie that can really help you process stuff. But anyway, so the point is that I lost my train of thought. I'm really sorry. I was
just saying that I really haven't been any of these characters.
Yeah. But I almost don't know that you even have to. You know what I mean?
I can still admire the movie and appreciate the movie, and I get so much of what it's saying about relationships. But part of me was like really digging deep and trying to figure out like, have I been the person who like wanted to save someone? Have I been the person? I've certainly been hung up on exes, but again, that it was so long ago that I don't remember what that felt like.
And I also think that reflecting on once you're out of something, reflecting on why you were in it to begin with, you know, I think can be difficult, and especially just like, and it depends on the personality type. It depends on the kind of person you are. It depends on the kind of people that they are. You know, you really have to kind of work through, I've always been really into like, what are my hangups? What are, although some people get defensive, some people get like, you know, again, they kind of push out. I'm so much more of like, I'll take on, like I'm a codependent. Like, I'll take on the shit and be like, okay, what am I doing that's wrong here? You know? So like when I watch Rob in this movie, so happens that he has my same name. I watch it and I go like, he doesn't realize the mistakes that he's making. Again, he's not lying to her. He's not vicious. He genuinely thinks what he's doing is productive. He genuinely thinks that like, okay, this girl can help me, he thinks that this and that, you know, and it's kind of like, he just doesn't realize the mistakes that he's making, you know? And I think that that's really interesting in terms of the way Nina is not trying to be there. She doesn't want to be there. He's keeping her there. And so is she.
And so is Holly.
Holly is the one, like they're both doing it because that's the interesting thing about the relationship to them. You know, it's that thing where it's like, if we're not talking about Nina, what are we talking about? Mm-hmm. Like where they go to dinner and she's like, how come I didn't know about your PhD? How come I didn't know about that you're here at the parents every something? Like, how come I didn't know? Well, because all we ever fucking talk about is your dead ex-girlfriend.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like if that's all we ever talk, if that's the whole basis of our relationship, you know, that's, we don't really know each other that well, you know, we don't really. And so I just, you know, that's the stuff that stands out to me.
They also fuck a lot, which is nice. Talking about Species a couple of weeks ago, like, here's a more contemporary movie that features a lot of sex. And it's like, right, some movies still do this. Not many.
And it's like...
way more than I remember.
And it's... but it's like, it's shot really well. And I don't mean in an exploitative way. Like, it's shot in a really, like, intimate, sexy way. Like, it's got a lot of good... and again, not to go back to this, but Abigail Hardingham just has a... she has a sultriness to her. You know what I mean? Like, that's just, like, really appropriate for this particular... character, this particular like role, like the way that she's sort of longing, and that there's like a kind of interior longing to her, and she wants to be sexy, and she wants to be provocative, and she wants to be, and she has, she's very young obviously, but she has that innocence to her. So there is a particular way that the sex is framed, and that she is framed, and that she's presented, still emphasizing her naivety a lot. Like, there's those jump cuts of her sitting on her dorm room bed, you know, over the course of a couple days. But then I love the moment at the end of the movie where they frame, where it's the cat, it's the overhead shot of her with the pillow. Mm-hmm. At the beginning of the movie, she puts the phone in the spot where he would be laying, you know, I wish I'd kissed you and all that. And at the end, she's got the black sheets and it's just her by herself. And she leaves the space. It's kind of like she leaves the space for Nina. I just think that stuff is so cool. I think that she's really effective in this movie.
She's great. And this is the kind of movie that I was like, oh, this... she should have like totally popped off this movie and become a big star, and not that many people saw it, as we already pointed out, but B, I think she does a lot of like British TV. It looks like,
She's working.
A cursory view of her IMDb makes it look like she does a lot of British TV.
She and O'Shaughnessy should be huge stars. I would love to see, I don't think I've seen Fiona O'Shaughnessy in anything else that
I definitely have not. Which is a shame, because she's really terrific in this movie.
Her comic timing in this is she is just brilliant. And I mean, you need that. You can have the two kind of sexy lovers together, but like, you need that voice, that kind of truth teller voice. And she's just so, so, so funny.
It looks like I have seen her in Don't Breathe 2 and in Gretel and Hansel, but I don't remember her from either movie. And she played Mother in both of them.
Okay. I haven't said anything. I've been giving praise to the two female leads. Kean Barry is, I wrote down, he's appropriately doofy.
Yeah, right.
Like, he's just a doofy dude. Like, and that's what that role should be. He should be this like clueless, doofy dude who doesn't realize, you know, all the things that are out that I've already talked about.
I realized that I name checked this movie in my review. And Adam and I were just talking about it the other night over text because he watches it, I think, every Scary Movie month. But have you ever seen Burying the X, the Joe Dante movie?
Yes.
I feel like that, and I kind of like that movie.
Yeah, you said, like, this is what that movie's trying to be.
Yeah, that movie's like the sitcom version of this, in terms of, like, Ashley Greene does kind of play her a little bit more, like, shrill and pay attention to me, and she's literally getting between them because she's inserting herself between them, unlike Nina, who, as you pointed out, doesn't want to be there. And is being manifested by them, you know.
It's like unwilling Beetlejuice.
Which was the original title for this movie. It would be an interesting... oh my god.
Beetlejuice that box.
Right? I'm pretty sure Beetlejuice fucks. It would just be an interesting double feature because both the movies are tackling the same subject, but I think in very different ways. And Nina Forever, I think, is a lot smarter and more subtle and truth be told, more honest. Even though I like Burying the X, it's much more in like, this is entertaining. I like Joe Dante.
Yeah.
Isn't that the New Beverly? Like, that's...
this is like, I'm sorry, this is like the Chasing Amy of horror comedies, where it like wants to do like really brutal. I'm looking through my notes here and there's a line where Rob looks at Nina and goes, this doesn't mean I'm going to forget you. And Nina goes, what the fuck do you think you mean by that? And do you think you mean by that? And that to me just underlines like, dude, this is so not about you. This is so not about you at all. But there's that whole montage where they buy the sheets. But like, even like you mentioned, like the sitcom-y version, like there's that fun montage where they buy the sheets and they buy them white. And at one point she's like, I don't know why you bought white. Like, so then they buy red, you know, and by the end of the movie, Holly buys black ones. And there, but that whole, that innocence, again, the first time you see it, like you said, the romantic inside you is like, oh, they're going to work it out. You know?
Right, right.
And then you watch the movie a couple of times and you're like, oh, oh my God, they are just repressing. They are just trying their best to not think about this, but, you know, pretend it's just all fine. It's just, they think they're helping each other. It's just so funny.
Well, it's just, you know, movies have taught me to view them a certain way. And mm-hmm. so the first time I sit down to watch this movie, it's like, how's this couple going to overcome this obstacle?
Right.
Not realizing that it's about a couple that shouldn't be together, that shouldn't overcome this obstacle.
Right. And that obstacle, they're inviting that obstacle.
I mean, right.
That moment in the beginning where he's sitting there listening to the music and, you know, she is just like radiating horniness. Like she walks over to him. She might as well have just been like, do you want to go like fuck right now? Like, can we just get out of here? Right. And she's like, what are you listening to? And she does the thing with the Airbud. And then she like, you know, they.
And it's the Shins. And she's like, this song will change your life.
I'll change your life. I've known you for 5 days, so change your life.
In 2004, I loved that movie.
As I said, as I wrote about once, there is a time and place for Garden State. It's for about 45 minutes when you're like 21 years old.
Right.
That's about it.
Are you a 500 Days of Summer fan?
I approach that movie now the way I approach like High Fidelity, where I'm like, oh, he's the villain.
Yeah, well, that's why I bring it up, because it's the other movie that popped into my head. Yeah. Where you get to the end of that movie and you're like, oh, it's how they're not supposed to be together. And I don't even particularly like that movie, but I applaud it for telling the story of a couple that does not belong together.
It's the Fight Club or like the, you know, like Starship Troopers, where like, oh, they're making fun of you,
right?
Like, that kind of thing. American Psycho, something like that. I mean, I'm not putting it on that level, but yeah, no, I definitely had the moment where like 500 Days of Summer came out and I was like, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And then like revisited it 5 or 6 years later. I was like, oh, I get it.
Right.
And I don't even know with that movie, I'm not even 100% sure how much the movie's aware of it. But
yeah,
but I think you can still read it and say like, yep, nope, that is.
Well, it's got that amazing sequence where it's like side by side.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a 500 Days of Summer. Right. The party, how he thinks it's going to go and how it actually goes. And like, yep, that has 100% been my life before.
Oh, for sure. Oh, yeah. 100%. Then there's lots of things about, and like casting Zooey Deschanel, obviously, like doing the Manic Pixie Dream Girl. Like, it's just like, that's so much about, like, that's why I kind of appreciate that movie, because it is so much of a kind of a commentary on her, too.
Right.
You know what I mean? In terms of like, she's going out of her way to play this character that she's kind of been assigned. Like, you know, like I'm a big New Girl fan. And so like, I watch New Girl and like, I think she's, even though she got shit for that, like, she's totally aware of her image. Like she, like so much of that show is making fun of her character for being that way. You know what I mean? And so that's why I can kind of appreciate that. But we're talking about Zooey Deschanel. We're talking about Abigail Hardingham, who is just unreal. She is a babe in this movie.
Somebody put her in more stuff, please.
Put her in more stuff. Give her a new franchise. I don't know. She's just wonderful. Like, she's just, yep, so naturalistic and so, yep, interesting. Again, just as we're talking, just scrolling through my notes, seeing if there's anything else in here. I love Nina's line. You don't make happiness. It blooms on anything you don't scrub too hard. Ouch. You know nothing, you mean nothing. There's so many of her lines in this that are just so cutting and interesting. And I kind of feel like if you haven't seen Nina Forever and you just listen to us talk about it, you kind of got like a lot of, I don't even know, you got a lot of stuff out of order that may or may not have made,
right,
you want to watch.
Right. Yeah, right, really, exactly.
Know. I just think it's really, really, really effective and really wonderful.
I miss, Adam and I just did a Friday Night Double Features this week, and mm-hmm. we talked about Epic Pictures. Adam talked about Epic Pictures, which then became Dread Central Presents. And Epic Pictures used to put out really kind of unusual and interesting stuff. And in fact, I was supposed to see Nina Forever at a film festival. There used to be this thing called the Bruce Campbell Horror Film Festival. And they were going to show Nina Forever. And like the day of or the day before, they actually pulled it and had to swap it out with something, and they ended up swapping it out with Turbo Kid, which worked out great for me because that was my first viewing of Turbo Kid, and that movie changed my life.
Sure.
So I didn't see Nina Forever until like a festival screener or something like that. But this is, I would argue, among the best titles in their library. I had started out the show saying a lot of their stuff is available for free across all the streaming platforms. And I just went in today and added a bunch of the more recent stuff Because up to a point, I had seen basically everything they put out because I was really following them and being like, oh, they're doing kind of cool stuff and watching everything they distributed. And then I noticed a drop off in quality and I kind of bailed. But now I've gone back and tried to add a bunch of stuff. But yeah, this, I would argue, is one of like the crown jewels in their library.
I think this would be a crown jewel in anybody's library.
I agree with that. Yeah.
Really? No, I mean, I agree with it definitely, but I'm just saying, like, I'm just thinking like that is, it's, I don't know. I sit here and I'm thinking like, am I overselling this? And I'm like, no, I'm really not. I think this movie is brilliant.
Yeah.
I wrote, this is all easier than coping. Holding on to old resentments is centering. It's a lot easier than growing. It's like, yeah. That sounds about right, and I'm sure there's more than a few people out there who can relate to that. Oh, and I love the end. Oh my god, the ending. Speaking of like horror comedy, or sitcoms or whatever, romantic comedies. When Rob shows up at the end and he does the knock on the door, and there's the big like she opens the door, and he's like, "I had to come, like you know, I had to, you know, like you had me at hello, like it's gonna be this moment." And then she just pushes the door open, and you see the blood, and she's just like, "I'm sorry, like it's not." It's too late. It's way too late. Like, it's way too late. And this is not a good idea.
You may push back on me for this, but part of me wishes that that had been the reveal of this whole transference idea. That we're already aware of this much sooner because she's fucking the other guy and Nina shows up and says, like, I'm with you now. And, like, the movie kind of spells that out in a way that part of me wished when I got to that shot today, I was like, oh, what a fucking gut punch it would have been had that been the reveal. And then the movie basically ends.
Yeah, it's like basically the last part of the movie. I wonder, I mean, you need something for her to be doing though for that part of the movie.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, like the ambulance, because that scene is also really important because that's when she gets her first ambulance assignment,
right,
where she actually sees a crash very similar to Nina's and is able to kind of see. That's another thing, it's another layer about the movie, where it's like she's emotionally processing the idea of being a paramedic. So like this idea that it's somebody who died in an accident. And so when she finally gets far enough in her career where she goes out on her first call and she actually sees an accident that's very similar to what killed Nina. And she talks about she and her friend talk about the elation of like, oh my God, that was amazing. Like it's a totally different kind of euphoria. And that's kind of what she was trying to get at with Rob, you know, at least part of what she was trying to get at with him. And so now that she's processed that emotion in a new context, it's like, oh, I don't need him. You know what I mean? Like, oh, I don't.
Right.
That's not what this is. Like, you know what I mean? But I can totally see that. That's totally reasonable. Like if that had happened, that would have been cool. Again, my curiosity goes to like, well, what's she doing in that scene instead? If we don't see her, you know, do we just follow Rob around? Like, it's not really about him, you know?
Yeah.
I totally agree. I think we'd
have
been
less
really
interested
cool.
in following Rob around than I am.
Yeah,
following
that's what I'm saying.
Abigail
Hardigan. I would not really want, I would like to stay with her, please. Thank you.
In fact, cut him out of the movie completely.
In fact, just get him,
and make this a movie about the two of them.
They could just be all this shot. Well, see, that's the poster shot. Like, that's how you know the shot.
Oh,
the
I know.
The shot where they're watching, where it cuts to them watching the laptop together.
Yeah.
Because I'm thinking about her and Nina laying in bed where it's like they try to do something and they just cut. It's just, there's a hard cut. And he's asleep and it's just the two of them naked, bloody, laying up in the bed and watching something on the laptop. I think it's so funny.
I hope people check this movie out. I hope that, you know, usually for Scary Movie Month, we tend to do sort of established classics or cult films or whatever. And this is one of the first times we've kind of taken a chance on a real indie that people might not have even heard of. And hopefully we've sold it in such a way that people will check it out. Like I said, it's streaming for free almost everywhere.
You can literally watch this anywhere. Please go watch it. I think it's well worth your time.
And as Rob pointed out, there's a great Blu-ray that has this as a double feature. So you get two movies for like $15 with Natasha Kermani's Imitation Girl with Lauren Ashley Carter, which is a really interesting movie.
Really, really cool movie as well. Yeah.
Lauren Ashley Carter kind of disappeared.
You would know better than me. I don't know that.
Did she retire? Like, what the fuck?
Let's go to the tab. Let's open it up. But yeah, I ordered this Blu-ray like I think immediately after I watched it for the first time.
Oh, so nice!
I pull this one off the shelf every year. I think it's really, really strong.
No, she didn't necessarily retire. She just doesn't work as much. Her last credits are in 2021, but like there was a time where you couldn't throw a rock in the indie horror world without hitting a Lauren Ashley Carter performance. And she appears to have slowed down. I don't know that she's fully retired, but hasn't been making a lot of stuff.
She and Abigail Hardingham should do movies together.
I'm in agreement with you.
Because that would be good for America and the world and the universe if Abigail Hardingham was in more movies.
I agree with you. I want to see
called Abigail Forever. That's what I should have called the movie.
If they were going to recast this movie for like an American remake,
oh my God,
who would be in it?
With The Rock. I don't know. who would be in it?
And he would carry it to $100 million at the box office. Who would it be?
It would be Rachel Sonnet.
OMG. Don't even tease me with this.
It would be.
Did you read about her new movie?
No. Tell me
it's she's reuniting with the writer director of Shiva Baby for a movie about two queer like high school girls who start a fight club so that they can hook up with cheerleaders.
I mean, sold.
Right? Like
sold.
I don't even need to do my top 10 list for the next couple of years. That's my favorite movie.
My favorite movies of the year are Rachel Sonnet's queer fight club movie. Abigail Hardingham's back tattoo in Ina Forever and sexy Beetlejuice that fucks. Top 10. Patrick probably at this movie.
I can't make a top 10 this year, by the way. I can make a top 10 horror movies. I can't make a straight top 10.
Is this the year you stop differentiating?
I mean, maybe, but I feel bad about that.
I don't know.
We're still a ways away from like all the awards bait movies because we're entering November and December.
I thought Netflix sent out that the Adam Sandler screener.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, oh shit, we're starting screener season.
No,
nothing came out.
But there's still a bunch of stuff to look forward to. Sam Mendes has a new movie. I haven't seen Amsterdam yet. Mm-hmm. I'm kidding about these movies, people. But I am excited about like The Fablemans and a couple other titles.
Based on what we said about Halloween Ends earlier, I don't know. But see, here's the thing. What happens? Like when people listen to this, what percentage of people tell us that we're wrong and what percentage of people agree with us? I don't even know anymore.
No, I don't either.
Discourse on this movie is insane. I could squeeze out a top 10, I think. But yeah, you're right. I mean, we're not even into the award season yet. I am seeing Black Adam tomorrow, though.
Congratulations. I plan to see it never.
I'm only seeing it for the hashtag TV's Rob DiCrescino purposes. I was like, I guess, sure. I'll go see the new The Rock product.
Are you talking Black Adam on Friday?
Don't jinx it.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah.
It comes out on Friday?
Sometimes they fall through. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, got it.
I'm hoping to rock that and Banshees. I'm hoping that'll be my little double.
Nice. One of those movies. Sounds very good.
Yeah. And if that doesn't happen, I'll ask you to cut this part up.
anything else we want to say about Nina Forever?
It's just that it rules. Watch it. It's probably free. It's not going to take up that much of your time. You've got time in Scary Movie Month. You've been watching Halloween Ends, and you've been watching whatever the fuck Shudder's got. You've got been watching your box sets of all your bullshit. Just put on Nina Forever.
I love it. Remember to go to fthismovie.com every day for more shit like this. And follow us on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and YouTube for reserved seating every Thursday.
Right.
Don't forget that we have a Patreon now, F This Movie, or I always do the address backwards. Patreon.com/F This Movie. We just put out a new episode with me and Mike talking about our five favorite horror directors, literally about that posted like an hour before you and I started recording, Rob. So
I saw.
Very exciting. And that's it. Happy Scary Movie Month. Keep doing the Scary Movie Challenge. We'll be back next week, I think, with me and JB talking Hammer movies.
Abigail Hardingham forever.
If we say it three times, she'll appear.
She'll appear.
Or if we start fucking. Why do you have to live in Philly? Damn it.
Same if you are, my friend. We can see each other now. You know, we'll attempt it.
Bye, everybody.
Yeah.